everyone. We've got a very special episode today, an exclusive interview with Directive 8020's creative director, Will Doyle. The latest Supermassive Games title, we talk about the game's horror inspirations, character depth, and how Directive 8020 is a departure from the Dark Pictures Anthology's usual cold open formula. Enjoy.
Well, hi, I'm Will Doyle. I'm the creative director of Directive 8020.
Awesome. Well, I'm Kate Sanchez, and I've played Directive 23 times now. So that explains why I really wanted to have this interview. To kick things off, one of the things that I've really admired about the games and this anthology is the idea of using horror as a guide and a baseline for storytelling. So you've explored it multiple different ways, and I think in Directive 8020, it really bridges the gap between the genre storytelling elements that you get from sci-fi, like Isolation, Trust, and all of that, and then it also gets into those icky bits with things like body horror and, of course, everything we can expect from what goes bump in the dark corridors. What is it about genre storytelling that really has made it the path that you all have taken with your games?
It's really interesting. Like when we looked back to the beginning of the Dark Pictures, we kind of, like, horror is fantastic because it's a really, really broad church, right? You know, there's so many different subgenres. And I think, right at the start, kind of coming off the back of Until Dawn, which we had a lot of success with, we looked down and we thought, okay, we want to make our own series here. And we looked at horror as a whole, and I think we identified 39 different subgenres, which we could kind of pin to a board. And then we kind of went through those and we sort of whittled them down to go which ones would make good stories. And we kind of ended up with this shortlist. And the really, really great thing about it is as storytellers, because of that variety, it allows us to go in so many different directions. And each, you know, like you say, all subgenres of horror are connected by we want to scare your pants off. You know, so it's got that kind of fear that goes through it, but there are so many different, kind of emotions and sort of, themes that you can lean into within each different genre. It gets really, really interesting for us. So it's good for the variety as storytellers. But that's also really, really good for our team to have this kind of variety of our artists don't know exactly what they're going to work on next, or, you know, or they know that they're going to work on something different next, which is really, really fun. That keeps our writers, kind of, sharp and on edge. And yeah, you know, it just shakes things up. And I think for our fans as well, our fans have that whole thing of like, oh, what's next? You know, so we know that, with storytelling games, you're always going to get it's also very subjective, right? You know, you're going to get people that are like, oh, I didn't quite like so much like this story. Well, you've got the next one to come. And that's always been something for us. You know, it's always shaking it up every time. So yeah, it's a lot of fun to work in.
And I think that really comes through with Directive 8020's design as well, particularly in how the characters are handled. So they each embody specific tropes, and I don't use trope as a bad word here. Like, I think that they're core to how we tell stories and archetypes, I guess, is probably the better word for here. And each of the characters in Directive 8020 kind of embody people or characters that we've seen in different types of sci-fi films, or even games. I think for me, the one that really stuck out was, I believe her name was Cooper, the medical officer. She reminded me a lot of Vasquez, but she also had the role of being the doctor on the ship, which gives us an entirely different dynamic. What was it like crafting the identities of each of the characters, both within the trope that they fit, but also playing with them a little bit more to kind of go against expectations that people may have?
It's interesting. Like we kind of in the Dark Pictures, we've always sort of worn our influences on our sleeve a little bit, you know, and it's kind of one of the great things about video games is it gives you the chance to sort of put yourself in a what if situation, you know, what one, what if I could play that horror movie I love? And two, if I was in that situation, what would I do? So that's really interesting. When it comes to kind of characters, sure, we looked at a whole bunch of horror movies, and sci-fi horror, and we're kind of like, okay, these are strong archetypes we can identify with. But our games are branching, right? You know, so yeah. That's a really, it often kind of starts a little bit with that we sort of go, the best set of characters for our games are ones that have kind of, different outcomes. Yeah, that they can end up in different ways. And of course we have survival. So, you know, the basic outcome is you live or you die. But if you live, we kind of want the character to go to different places, and we often end up being quite binary about that. We sort of say, well, this character could go here, or they could go there. So yeah, it's kind of, in a way, it's sort of classic screenwriting that you kind of, we look at each individual character and we go, well, what is their, wants and needs, you know, and we kind of identify that. And then we think, what are the challenges in their way, and where can they end up in? In this game, we kind of advanced the formula a little bit by codifying some of it with the destinies system. So, you know, it actually says now, okay, this character can get this destiny or this destiny, which represents that kind of journey that they've been on. So yeah, it's, and then, you know, as with all creative things, like some of it is just gut instincts of what do we like, you know, so, as we've got a whole load of fans, of horror and sci-fi. I myself, I'm a massive fan of Aliens. So yeah, having a little bit of Vasquez in Cooper was cool. It's also interesting because we also hit this kind of thing of, because all your characters are playable. We have this issue that often, we often kind of think that a gamer will take control of a character, and if they don't really like that character in our games, well, they can die. Yeah. And we always have that kind of in the back of our head that we're like, oh, well, if you don't like that character, kill them. But we've kind of seen over time that players, our fans don't really like that. They kind of want to love everyone. Yeah. And so finding a way to make the characters appealing is really, really interesting. So we do a couple of things. We write down, what would happen if we took this character out of the story? Yeah. And obviously the story should be diminished in some way if that happens. Mm-hmm. So they have to play some role. And what is it about that character that you're going to love? And for Cooper, we kind of had, she's badass, you know, she's an ex-Marine. So she's got this kind of real sort of toughness to her. She's funny. She has this relationship with Anders, which is kind of different from the rest of the crew. But she also has a vulnerability to her. She has this kind of, this tragedy in her past, this kind of story of survival. And so that we kind of figured between that, that's going to give her some empathy, you know, that there's going to be something there which you as a fan can kind of hook onto. And then, you know, I could go through the whole cast. There's a whole load of them. We did that for sort of all of them.
I think one of the things that was also really exciting, experiencing each of these characters, was I'm a person who, I know I'm going to go into a game with multiple playthroughs, but my first one, I'm going to try to make sure everybody lives. So I tried to find every secret. I tried to find every little intricacy between people. But in my other playthroughs of the games, I noticed how easy it was to skip certain beats that would have informed you about, using Cooper as an example again, of, you know, something in her past. But there were other elements, if you don't explore that right off the bat, where you could find it, whether it's the video where she's talking about it, that you kind of have to see as you're going in the third act of the game, or if it's in her relationship and how she has backs and forths with Williams. How do you account for the choice-driven system and the fact that maybe a player may not find out these core elements of characters? How do you make sure to breadcrumb that throughout the game without it being overwhelming for a player who does maybe explore that character on the first go around?
That's a really good question. We kind of, we hit a real set of challenges with this, because if you give away or if you explain too much, you're kind of forcing a path through the story, and ours is a branching game, so it kind of clashes against player agency. We always want you to. One of the pillars of the Dark Pictures from the design side is discovery. Yeah, so you're kind of part of the fun of our games is peeling away the skins of the onion, you know, of kind of like working your way through it, finding out all of the lore and all of the kind of hidden interactions and stuff. So we have to allow some of that. But yet we also want you to learn certain things about the character that are essential, and sometimes certain story points are essential. So like to give you some examples, Cooper, as you kind of touched on there, there's a load you can find out about her, but a lot of her playtime is dependent on other characters dying. Yeah. So if Stafford dies, she has a bigger role in the story because she kind of steps up to take on some of his scenes. And that's really interesting, you know, that there's a fun thing we did in this game where we tried to make it so that the final episode you could play almost anyone and you could even kind of have one character alive on their own. And so there's this really fun route for us, even for us as developers having made it, just to play it and kind of go, okay, let's go for a Cooper ending where other characters have died. And then Cooper kind of rises up in the story and you go, oh wow, she's got this different, you know, that she really kind of becomes prominent. And that works for a whole bunch of different characters. There's a really interesting example of this of the kind of other side of that in, House of Ashes, one of our earlier games where we had, we knew that we really wanted this theme at the heart of it, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And, spoilers here, you know, if you're from House of Ashes, but there's a moment between two characters, Salim and Jason, where that theme really, really comes to the forefront. And we were like, you can't miss that. You know, like you have to have that bit. So it does mean that those characters cannot die until they get to that point because the story requires it. So we have these kind of linchpin moments for certain characters that just have to occur. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes we hit problems where like, when we were making House of Ashes, for example, I won't say what, but there's a certain part of the story that you learn really near the end that is kind of crucial to understanding how the monster exists and stuff like that. We initially had it kind of hidden, and we had to change the story after testing it because we were like, people could take a certain path through it where they're like, I don't really know what happened there. Like, you know, what was that? And it's like, well, that's the path you took. But it led to an unsatisfying ending. So we had to change the story to kind of elevate that. And we did similar things in Director 8020 as well. You know, and you can never quite win. You know, there's always somebody that's going to play a version of it where they're like, hold on, what happened to that character? Well, that character died, you know. So yeah, it's tricky. I guess.
One of the other exciting things for me, as an avid horror fan, but also, sci-fi horror, space horror specifically, is that's my bread and butter. That's what I love. Something about the isolation and loneliness of space that just gets to you. What I loved about the storytelling in Directive 8020 is that it takes two core sci-fi elements, right? So you can approach sci-fi, and space travel in a really banal way, like Alien does. They're just people on a ship here to work, and there just so happens to be an alien. Or you can take it in a destiny-shaping, life-saving, humanity-saving way, like we've seen recently with Project Hail Mary. How did you marry those two elements of the sci-fi genre, obviously leaning heavily into horror, but really bridging the fact that there is, like, this is a job for them, especially with the consistent usage of Corinth and how Williams plays out, but also capture the gravity of the situation and their need to succeed, both before the reveal as well as kind of after that. not that I think they're opposing, but I think sometimes in sci-fi you choose one way or the other.
I know what you mean. So I think we, like, to kind of step back and look at why we set the basic premise of the story the way we did was, in our games are based around choices. And so we always look at stakes and we always kind of go, that kind of, everything has to come back to that. It has to go, well, why am I making this decision? And if I make this decision, what will I lose? And for Director 820, we wanted to create huge stakes by saying that the fate of Earth, you know, the fate of humanity is at stake. And so we wanted this kind of desperate mission where, this, you know, the Earth is dying and humanity is kind of looking to the stars and trying to kind of find a home for themselves in space. And that was really, really cool. It was inspired a little bit, by the movie Sunshine, where, you know, the sun's going to blow up, or we've got to go out and we've got to restart it. And so there was that aspect. And then there was also the aspect of, we wanted, in that story, we wanted to tell a story which was about all of humanity. So we had a very multinational cast, you know, and that was also intentional there. So once we kind of set that all up, we then kind of thought, well, what is one of the really big themes of sci-fi? And a lot of, you know, all sci-fi is extrapolation to some degree, but this kind of corporate angle is very classic. You know, it's an angle that's right at the heart of Aliens, you know, and the Alien series. And so we kind of had this angle of Corinth that came into it when we were coming up with a story where we were like, oh, okay, this is interesting. Now, Corinth is in our game world, it's a company that goes back decades. And we had this kind of thing of, okay, we'll create this billionaire Williams and what if he's on the ship? And so it was kind of elevating and extrapolating on some of the concerns I guess we have now, you know, in the present day of huge, powerful corporations. Mm-hmm. And what do they have really in mind for us all? And that was interesting. But yeah, at the same time, we, although there is a kind of very sinister thing going through the story, we also wanted to create this character in Williams that was human as well. So we have this whole angle of him wanting to be on the ship to be with his kind of hero Stafford, you know. So we tried to humanize it a bit, but yeah, there is a dark vein going through the whole story.
And I love that you brought up Sunshine because the tree sequences reminded me a lot of the Oxygen Garden in that film as well. And I wanted to ask in terms of inspirations, and I admire how much Directive 8020 pays homage without really being shadowed by, whether it's the international cast and some of the breakdown reminding me of casts that we see in films like Sunshine. There's a little bit of Event Horizon. There's a little bit of Dead Space. There's a lot of Alien. And of course, we have The Thing coming in as well. What are maybe some less, I don't want to say, like quieter homages to sci-fi horror that are in the game that you really love, but maybe somebody hasn't noticed yet?
Yeah, that's interesting. So, there's quite a relatively lesser known film called Pandorum, which, there's quite a bit of the story is kind of, inspired by some of that. Like in that movie, it's about a bunch of people waking up after a long hypersleep. And it's got this kind of idea of sort of hypersleep sickness, a kind of a sort of madness that kind of goes into people. So there's some interesting nods to that movie. The other one that's quite big in there is the writings of H.P. Lovecraft, and specifically the story At the Mountains of Madness, where At the Mountains of Madness has this idea of this kind of alien species, that, that was kind of used by another alien species as a tool and kind of created as this kind of worker race. And that kind of ties in quite a lot to our creature. The actual design of the creature itself was really, really interesting. So that was kind of inspired by The Thing, inspired a little bit by this H.P. Lovecraft story. And then, of course, we kind of gave it our own twist as well. So, yeah, there's a whole bunch of stuff in there.
One of the things I've also been wondering, and I wanted to know how it kind of played. You touched on it a little bit earlier in discussing characters. One of the core elements of sci-fi stories, especially when you're going to save the world, is the international identity of the crew, not only because, you know, the whole world will come together, but also because those cultural tensions and cultural difference often make space for really fruitful storytelling, whether it's a character's background or how they interact with each other from where they came from. How did you all approach working that in without necessarily being really over the head with it? Like I, when I noticed the patches on the arms, I started trying to identify accents and like where people were from and like slowly learned more that way. But it was also really important because the way that we see each of the characters kind of represent where they're from, it does have an impact on some of the choices that they, or not choices that they make, but some of the background information we have on them. So yeah.
Yeah, it was interesting. Like I say, at the very start, we wanted this big space mission to be represented by nations from across the earth, you know, everyone kind of working together to do this great mission. A little bit of it was we wanted, you know, we're a British studio and we wanted to have a British star for this one. Like all of our previous Dark Pictures, are very kind of, you know, led by sort of, American accented people. And this time around we wanted a Brit. So we got Lashana, and that was amazing for us. You know, like she's such a big star. And we kind of then we sort of looked into, I mean, I think it was interesting. You know, we have Isley is, you know, from the Netherlands. Cernan is Turkish. We had another Brit with Sins, the Canadian, Carter. So it was kind of, in a way, I guess we didn't really, I don't think we really played up to those kind of differences that that might create. We try to kind of assume, okay, everyone here is scientists, you know, so they're all united by this kind of, thinking with their heads first thing. But I think it gave the story texture in the end of it. You know, it gives it variety, which is interesting.
One of the other things that I really appreciate that you all did was, in horror, usually the first person to die just kind of gets forgotten. And they exit the scene and they are there to bring the killer into the fold. But we don't get that with Sims at all, primarily because finding Sims videos and conversations with both her connection to what she's found being awake on the ship and also conversations to her mom that we see, she gets to be a really fleshed out character despite being a character who you either let die immediately or, you know, just becomes the big boogeyman for a big focus of the first act of the game. What was the choice to flesh her out and make sure that there really isn't a character that gets forgotten here? Because even Carter ends up with two completely different ways that you can play him and sending ripples across the game.
Yeah, that so we kind of, this is actually a little bit new for us because we've always had this prologue where people die and it kind of sets the stakes for, okay, this is a game about death. But most of our prologues prior to this game sort of take place, they're quite divorced from the main setting of the game. You know, there might be a big time jump or whatever. This one takes place, you know, whatever it is, 48 hours before everyone wakes up. So it's, you know, it's the same ship, same crew. There's an interesting story here, actually, a kind of development, thing that we've not really spoken about before, but when we started off this story, we wrote it so that either Carter or Sims could die last. Yeah, and we actually wrote a whole load of stuff where they could swap over, so it could be Carter all the way through. That's the kind of, you know, becomes this sort of villainous character, and Carter can go off into space. And basically, the problem we had was that they ended up so similar.
Yeah.
Through the need of, you know, to make that work, we thought it's making them boring. So we ended up saying, okay, it's going to be Sims that becomes this kind of villain. And then that gave us so much more. That gave us the idea of doing the messages to her mum and kind of having this thing that, although she's going around causing trouble and killing people, we always wanted to show you this is who she was,
yeah,
you know, originally. And that's always going to kind of tug on your heartstrings. Because we then created the big differences between them, we were then able to do a kind of similar thing with Carter, where we wanted to get Carter's family in there, and we wanted, yeah, to show, okay, Carter's got a daughter and a wife back at home, and that plays on the heartstrings as well. It's fair to say that the characters this time around, those prologue characters, have been huge hits for us. You know, like, yeah, we knew it when we appeal tested the game, where we were like, those guys were coming back really, really high. Like, you know, people were saying, yeah, they loved them. And, you know, almost like if we could turn back time, it would be kind of fun to make it so that you could keep them alive, because people love them so much, but no, they must die.
It was one of those things, as I did more playthroughs, where I really like the idea of small connections between characters, kind of letting you differentiate, especially in a game that is about face snatching or body snatching. The way that they play chess, and the line that you, if you choose to joke as Carter, he kind of asks for the next move. And I was like, oh my God, I knew it was going to come up. So I can see why they were huge hits.
Yeah. Well, there's also just a really interesting setup for them, you know, where they're, whereas everyone is in hypersleep, they're there for 4 years.
Yeah.
You know, hanging around with each other. So we kind of had this, fun thing when we designed them, of like, there's this line that these are the two people that are least likely in the world to ever kill each other. So we kind of, that was what brought them together. You know, that they'd be for all this psychological testing. It's like, okay, these two are never going to go wild and kill each other. So.
My last question is something I like to ask every creative I talk to, whether it's a director, a game developer. I try to ask, because I believe that when we create things, we put so much of ourselves into them. We dedicate ourselves to it. You can see pieces of who we are in the things that we make, whether it's a video game, a movie, a comic, anything. But I also believe that when we work on these projects, they also give us something back as well. So I wanted to ask, throughout the development and launch cycle of Directive 8020, what have you learned about yourself in the process?
That's interesting. this has been a long journey, this game. So there has been a lot of lessons along the way. I suppose, interestingly, like, we spend a lot of time talking about fear in our games, and, you know, what is it that is going to scare people, a lot of our games start off on a very, very high level, kind of like, okay, you don't like, you know, people don't like gore, they don't like, you know, being chased by monsters, whatever, and all these kind of sort of surface level things, and this game particularly, I think, established a different sort of fear. Like, I've always had a fear myself of space. You know, I'm quite safe. I'm not going to go up there, but I wouldn't, you know, and I kind of hate the idea of like the danger that puts you in. But this game, as we developed it, I think there are a whole load of different, slightly more subtle fears that we kind of got into. And with the twist in this story, there's a really interesting thing here about sort of exploitation and kind of like, you know, this sort of corporate angle that I thought was very, very relevant. And I guess what that's told me is our stories always work well when they go deeper, you know. So there's something interesting there for the future of what we do, you know, something we always aspire to. We always aspire to kind of go, okay, we're going to try and tell a story on multiple levels. But this one really has resonated with a whole load of people, for a whole variety of different reasons. And I think that has definitely taught me something.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time today.
Excellent. No, thank you for such great questions. And it's great talking to you.
Yay. Yeah. I'm happy you thought they were good. I was a little nervous because I nerd out about sci-fi and I nerd out about horror, so this gave me the perfect vehicle to do that.
Great. Well, yeah, lovely to talk to you. Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining, Kate. I'll send you the video and the transcription stuff so you can use that for writing it. And then perfect. I'll see you at SGF in a couple
weeks.
I'll
see you at SGF. Yeah. Bye, y'all. Right. Thank you.
Bye. Bye.